In the early hours of August 6, 2022, search teams gathered at Prosser Family Campground in Northern California. A 16-year-old girl named Keely Rodney had vanished after attending a large gathering near the water's edge. Her car, a silver Honda CR-V, was missing as well. Deputies worked from the assumption that she had tried to drive home after midnight. If so, she should have been found quickly. The roads were limited. The reservoir sat beside the campsite. Yet by mid-morning, nothing appeared on the shoreline or in the nearby tree line. Over the next several days, the search grew into one of the region's largest efforts. Helicopters scanned the reservoir. Boats ran sonar across the water. Volunteers searched trails and back roads. The family asked for direct help from anyone who could offer it. Despite the scale of the effort, no one could explain how a vehicle could disappear so close to the campground. The question pushed the investigation forward. It also widened the pressure on every decision made after that first morning. Chapter 1. The last hour of the gathering at Prosser Family Campground carried a mix of noise and movement. It was the early morning of August 6, 2022. The crowd of teenagers had thinned, but a few vehicles still idled or moved toward the exit road. A campfire burned low near the edge of the clearing. Music drifted from a speaker placed on a folding table. Weather remained calm. The reservoir sat several yards away in the dark, still and quiet. Keely Rodney had arrived at the gathering earlier in the night. Friends confirmed that she planned to stay only a short time before heading home. She had graduated early from a local charter school and was preparing for college. That night, she joined others for what had been described as an end-of-summer meetup. Estimates of the crowd ranged from several dozen to more than 200 at one point, though the number fluctuated as people came and went. Her vehicle, a silver Honda CR-V, was parked near the tree line. People saw her near the car during the evening. Witness accounts varied, but several said she had moved between the main gathering area and her vehicle multiple times. Most described her as social and calm. Others, when interviewed later, struggled to recall precise details about her movements. Near midnight, she had contact with a close friend who later told investigators that they planned to leave together. That plan changed as the night developed. The friend reported that they lost track of each other in the crowd. It remained unclear how long Keely stayed after that moment. No one recalled seeing her leave the site. No one followed her vehicle onto the road. In the hours that followed, this gap became the central unknown of the early investigation. Her family expected her home during the night. When she did not arrive, the concern built quickly. By early morning, the absence became alarming. Attempts to reach her phone failed. At that point, family members contacted law enforcement. The missing person report was logged shortly after. Deputies from the Nevada County Sheriff's Office responded first. It was around the time when early sunlight reached the treetops. The campground had already begun to clear. Only a few tents and vehicles remained. The deputies spoke with people still on site to determine the last confirmed timeline. They then walked the immediate area with the goal of finding any sign of disturbance, discarded personal items, or tire marks leading toward or away from the reservoir. The family arrived not long after. They began speaking with responders, giving details about Keely's appearance, her vehicle, and her expected route home. The initial assumption was straightforward. If she had left the campground after midnight, she should be somewhere along the narrow network of roads leading back toward the town of Truckee. The distance was short. The roadway was familiar to her. Deputies set the first search perimeter around the campground and along the routes leading from it. Volunteers who had been camping in nearby areas offered help. The focus in those first hours remained on the possibility of a roadway accident. Response teams looked at ditch lines, pull-offs, sharp corners, and embankments. Aerial support was requested early. A helicopter from the California Highway Patrol scanned the region. From overhead, it was possible to view roadways, tree gaps, and the reservoir surface. The reservoir formed a wide crescent beside the campground. Its color changed through the morning as the light rose. Still from the air, nothing appeared out of place. There were no visible objects near the shoreline and no reflection indicating a vehicle beneath the water. Ground crews used canines trained for search work. The animals move through the paths leading from the gathering area toward the waterfront and deeper into the woods. The campground's loose layout meant that searchers had to cover multiple footpaths and unofficial trails branching from the main clearing. Nothing from those sweeps added clarity. By midday, the scale of the operation increased. Additional deputies, emergency responders, and specialized teams joined the search. Vehicles moved in a loop along the narrow roads. Volunteers on foot searched brush near the reservoir. People who had attended the gathering began returning to the site or contacting the tip line to share information. Law enforcement began interviews with teenagers who had been present the previous night. This effort encountered immediate difficulty. The gathering was large, loosely organized, and involved many people who did not know one another. Some hesitated to speak openly. Others offered limited or inconsistent details. Investigators noted that the environment created normal challenges. Dim lighting at night, a crowd, multiple vehicles, and a fluid sense of movement as people arrived and left. Early information suggested that Keely had stayed later than expected and that her device stopped transmitting around the time she would have begun driving. That device location data placed the final signal near the campground. It was not precise enough to indicate whether she had reached the roadway, turned toward the exit, or entered the water. The uncertainty forced investigators to consider every possibility equally. A critical part of the first response involved the reservoir. Prosser Creek Reservoir sat only a short distance from the gathering site. Boats were prepared for deployment. Sonar scans were conducted along sections of the shoreline. Operators moved slowly to capture readouts from below the surface. The position of the reservoir meant that any vehicle entering the water should have been noticeable either by interruption in the shoreline or by a suspended object beneath the surface. But on the first day and the days that followed, nothing in the sonar data stood out. The family continued to gather at the site while coordinating volunteer support. Flyers were printed. Search maps were created. People walked the trails near the camp, scanned open ground, and checked the areas where vehicles might have gone unnoticed if they left the roadway at low speed. The mood carried a mix of urgency and disbelief. By all logic, a person and a vehicle should not disappear in such a small area. Law enforcement issued statements that every option remained under review. They stressed that there was no confirmed evidence of foul play. They also stressed that the terrain, though familiar to locals, carried risks in the dark. The reservoir, the narrow roads, and the wooded areas all held the potential for an accident. Despite this, the absence of any recoverable sign pushed pressure onto the search teams. Within the first 48 hours, the operation expanded beyond the campground. Teams moved along back roads leading toward Stampede Reservoir and Boca Reservoir. They checked boat ramps, pullouts, and dirt access trails used by hikers and off-road vehicles. They scanned for skid marks, broken branches, or any trace of a vehicle leaving the path. Nothing appeared. Back at Prosser Family Campground, deputies continued to gather information from people who had been at the gathering. Some attendees described the night as chaotic. Others said it felt like a typical late summer meetup. Music and conversation blended into the dark. Cars lined the gravel. People moved between parked vehicles. Many left before midnight, taking different exits through the trees. These factors made the final timeline harder to establish. Investigators focused heavily on the moment when Keely was last seen near her vehicle. That detail held importance because it suggested she still intended to drive. Her keys were unaccounted for. Her phone went silent shortly after. If she had entered the vehicle alone and attempted to leave, her likely route would have followed the main exit onto the nearby paved road. This was the conclusion that guided the early search. By the end of the first day, responders had covered the campground, shoreline, and primary roads multiple times. The reservoir had been scanned from the air and from boats, yet no new leads emerged. The lack of progress added pressure to the next morning's efforts. The second full day pushed searchers deeper into the surrounding terrain. All-terrain vehicles traveled along dirt spurs. Drone teams scanned tree lines and open fields. Helicopters repeated wide pattern sweeps. Dive teams checked small coves and inlets along the edges of the reservoir. nothing produced a result. At this point, the families of other teens began urging cooperation. Public statements were issued, asking anyone with information to come forward. Law enforcement reminded the community that time mattered. If the case involved an accident in rough terrain, rapid discovery could save a life. If it involved a vehicle submerged in the reservoir, early recovery could make a difference in investigative clarity. The sense of urgency increased with each hour. The search perimeter reached nearly every accessible point within a short radius of the campground. Because Keeley's route home would have passed through a small number of intersections, investigators focused on those areas as well. Cameras on nearby businesses were reviewed. Some offered partial visibility of roadways, but did not show her vehicle. Deputies expanded the search footprint beyond the expected drive path in case she had taken an unplanned turn or attempted to avoid traffic. Interviews continued. Some teens recalled seeing her vehicle parked near the tree line. Others recalled brief conversations with her earlier in the night. A few remembered seeing her move toward the campfire area. Investigators recorded each account carefully. Many details were difficult to verify because of the conditions at the gathering. Limited lighting, large crowds, and brief interactions created uncertainty. During the second night of the search, deputies returned to the reservoir again. They used high-visibility lighting on the shoreline. They checked for signs that a vehicle had entered the water at a non-obvious angle. The shoreline contained soft earth in some sections and rocky patches in others. Tire marks in such terrain would be visible unless disturbed by traffic or environmental changes. Nothing indicated entry. By the third day, the operation had become one of the largest missing person searches in the region in recent years. Volunteers continued to arrive. People brought boats, kayaks, and additional equipment. Law enforcement attempted to coordinate these efforts, reminding the public that untrained searches could disturb potential evidence or create safety concerns. Even so, volunteer participation remained high. The family urged everyone to remain active and vigilant. A key pattern developed. Despite constant activity around the reservoir, nothing changed. Helicopters returned again and again, sweeping the surface. Boats passed over similar arcs, scanning for anomalies. The reservoir remained central to the investigation because of proximity. Yet each day ended with the same conclusion: no vehicle detected, no debris found, no sign that she had entered the water. This result formed the first major conflict in the case. The most logical location produced nothing. That outcome forced investigators to expand their working theories. They examined possibilities involving remote roads, voluntary departure, or assistance from others. Still, none of these paths held evidence. With no vehicle and no confirmed sighting after midnight, the investigation remained fixed on the question that developed on the very first morning. How could both a person and a vehicle vanish within minutes of leaving a populated site? Pressure built in the community. People wanted clear guidance. Social groups formed to organize search plans. Family members continued to speak with law enforcement. They also arranged volunteer search schedules, distributed materials, and coordinated with community centers offering resources for those helping in the field. By the end of the week, investigators faced a shift. The search perimeter had reached a size that made continued expansion difficult. Multiple reservoirs, multiple road networks, numerous trail systems. Still, the campground and the reservoir at its edge remained the focal point, even if it produced no answers. The fact that the reservoir had already been searched repeatedly only deepened uncertainty. As the first week closed, responders faced growing pressure to produce new leads. All primary search zones had been covered. All early witnesses had been interviewed at least once. Aerial scans continued. Dive teams focused on sections of shoreline that had uneven contours. Volunteers kept walking marked paths. The early phase of the case ended with a single unresolved reality. The final known location was the campground. The vehicle remained missing. Keeley remained missing. Every hour since the early morning of August 6 added weight to the timeline. With no clear evidence and no recovered object, the investigation carried a single question into the next stage. If the reservoir and the surrounding roads held no answers, what explained the disappearance? This unsettled question pushed the case into its next phase and became the driving force for the escalation that followed. Strong exit beat. The first stage closed without clarity. The pressure moved from location to explanation, and tension shifted toward what investigators might have missed in the earliest hours of the search. Chapter 2. The second week of the search opened with a noticeable shift in tone. What began as an urgent missing person response had turned into a complex investigation with few reliable anchors. Law enforcement widened the perimeter far beyond the campground and reservoir. The decision reflected the fact that the core search zone had produced nothing. The emphasis moved toward building a timeline from witness accounts, phone data, and any environmental factors that could explain the disappearance. Community groups formed their own search networks. They created digital maps, assigned walking teams to distant trails, and placed markers in backcountry areas. Some residents used their own watercraft to examine smaller coves of nearby reservoirs. Others scanned culverts, drainage paths, and old service roads. People who had no connection to the gathering still joined. The absence of physical evidence made every possibility seem open. Witness accounts from the campground continued to change in small details. Some attendees described Keeley as alert and social earlier in the evening. Others recalled moments when she seemed tired or distracted. Several said they saw her close to her parked vehicle during the late hours. Many found it difficult to pinpoint specific times. Lighting at the campground was limited. Most people relied on cell phone flashlights or vehicle interior lights to navigate. As a result, visibility was poor and memories felt imprecise. Investigators revisited these accounts daily. The gaps in testimony created tension for the case. One attendee believed she had seen Keeley moving toward the main road. Another remembered her speaking with a small group beside a parked car. A third recalled her sitting briefly inside her own vehicle. None of these details could be confirmed by independent evidence. The inconsistencies forced investigators to reconstruct the timeline piece by piece. Law enforcement then focused heavily on her likely departure time. They reviewed all available phone data. Her device stopped transmitting near the campground around the time she should have been leaving. The reading was not exact. The final signal created a zone rather than a point. That zone was close to where she had been parked. The uncertainty between the signal area and her expected route home became the next investigative challenge. As days passed, law enforcement expanded the search far beyond Prosser Creek Reservoir. They included terrain leading toward Stampede Reservoir and Boca Reservoir. These areas contained steep banks, rugged paths, and trails used by hikers. Crews scanned these locations for signs of a vehicle entering from above. Searches also extended into residential zones in case she had turned in confusion or fatigue. Still, none of these efforts produced meaningful results. The lack of progress led investigators to re-examine the way the early search had been conducted. They reviewed sonar scans from the reservoir and confirmed that boats had covered open water and near-shore sections multiple times. The scans showed no anomalies large enough to indicate a submerged vehicle. The absence of a reading carried weight. Search teams believed they had cleared the reservoir. The judgment shaped the rest of the investigation's direction. Media involvement increased rapidly. Reporters gathered near the command center and asked for daily updates. The case drew regional and national attention because of the scale of the search and the mystery surrounding the timeline. Law enforcement held briefings and reminded the public that every scenario remained open. They asked that speculation be avoided because unverified claims could hinder the investigation. Despite this message, rumors circulated on social platforms. Some people suggested that Keeley had left the area voluntarily. Others believed she had been taken by another individual. None of these claims contained evidence. Law enforcement stated that no proof supported criminal involvement at that stage. The family continued to work with search groups. They spoke publicly about their daughter and urged anyone with information to come forward. They placed a strong emphasis on cooperation from those who attended the gathering. The number of teenagers present that night meant a wide pool of potential witnesses. Law enforcement encouraged each person to provide even minor details that could help reconstruct the timeline. Searchers on land began using more advanced equipment. Drone teams equipped with high-resolution cameras scanned open fields, wooded sections, and narrow paths where a vehicle might have come to rest. They mapped ravines and drainage areas. They searched beneath tree canopies. They reviewed footage for any sign of disturbed vegetation or displaced soil. Nothing stood out. As the investigation moved toward its midpoint, law enforcement noted a persistent issue. The reservoir had been searched, but the reliability of those early scans depended on how thoroughly they covered deeper sections. The reservoir's floor contained uneven terrain. Some areas had soft silt that could hide objects from basic scans. Despite this, the official view remained that the reservoir had been cleared. With that assumption in place, the investigative strategy turned outward rather than inward. Community pressure grew as days passed without developments. Residents questioned the search methods. Some questioned the accuracy of early witness accounts. Others questioned whether the reservoir should be scanned again. Investigators responded that they trusted their original coverage. They argued that a large object like a vehicle would have been detected. The absence of detection supported the theory that the vehicle was elsewhere. Volunteers continued to look in new locations. They searched fire roads and remote sections of national forest land. They looked at abandoned structures and off-grid cabins. Every day produced new possibilities, but no evidence. The distance of the search area became a factor. The more the perimeter expanded, the more the trail grew cold. Investigators understood that time worked against them. A significant challenge appeared in the inconsistent accounts about the final moments at the gathering. Teens described a crowded environment with constant movement. Some said people were leaving in groups. Others said people left alone. Many vehicles pulled in and out through darkness. The main exit road was visible only through gaps in the trees. In this environment, it was easy for a vehicle to depart without anyone noticing. This fact added complexity to the case and raised uncertainty about whether she truly remained near the campground after midnight. Crime scene technicians reviewed the campground area again. They searched for broken branches, disturbed soil, or marks along the shoreline that might indicate that a vehicle had gone into the water. They walked the same paths scanned during the first days. Once again, no evidence surfaced. The lack of physical indicators reinforced the earlier belief that the reservoir was not the final location. At the same time, investigators looked closer at the technological data. They examined cell tower activity in nearby regions. They looked at possible pings that could show movement beyond the campground. They reviewed traffic cameras on the main roads. None of these sources captured her vehicle. Many roads lacked cameras. This created another blind zone in the timeline. The community continued to organize on its own. People set out early and searched until dusk. They held briefings in parking lots and plotted new areas to cover. Some searched alone. Others formed groups of 10 or more. They focused on locations where a vehicle could leave the roadway unnoticed. These included embankments, steep drop-offs, and sections with heavy brush. Volunteers worked carefully and reported anything unusual. While this effort demonstrated strong support, the countless hours in the field revealed nothing. Urgency grew as the investigation reached a turning point. If Keely had left the campground and driven off the road, she should have been found by now. If she had entered another reservoir, a boat or sonar scan should have detected something. If she had traveled out of the region with assistance, evidence should have appeared through financial, phone, or camera records. None of these channels produced answers. The investigation reached a state where every path looked possible and none looked supported. Law enforcement began to face public questions about whether the early reservoir search should be reevaluated. The official response stayed consistent. They stated that the reservoir had been scanned multiple times from the surface and from the air. They also stated that conditions at the reservoir provided good visibility. The message emphasized confidence in the early work. Yet even with that confidence, some investigators recognized that the lack of progress required reconsideration of every assumption. Interviews with teenagers continued. Many cooperated. Some said they were unsure of details because the night felt busy and crowded. Investigators worked to piece together fragments into a consistent timeline. they placed emphasis on the last verified moment that someone recalled seeing her. That moment placed her near her vehicle. After that point, the timeline fractured. People reported seeing movement, but none could confirm whether it involved her. The case drew increasing attention from media outlets. Reports highlighted the size of the search and the mystery surrounding the disappearance. Public interest added pressure to investigators. They maintained steady communication through briefings and statements. They emphasized the scale of the effort and the need for accurate information. They reminded the community that speculation could cause harm. Investigators reviewed the search maps daily. They marked areas that had been covered and areas still requiring review. They added deeper terrain segments. They expanded sections near waterways. They examined topographic maps for hidden dips or natural channels that could conceal a vehicle. They walked steep embankments with rope support. They used thermal imaging during night searches. Still, the investigation returned no significant findings. During this period, investigators revisited the sonar coverage at Prosser Creek Reservoir. Teams reviewed the conditions on the days of the first searches. They looked at wind patterns, water surface clarity, and the scanning angles of the boats. They reviewed the type of sonar used. They confirmed that scans had been performed across open water. They also confirmed that shoreline passes were completed. None of the scans showed any sign of a vehicle. Despite this, some members of the community pushed for additional water searches. They argued that reservoir conditions could change under certain circumstances. They believed that a second or third review might reveal something missed earlier. Law enforcement acknowledged the concern, but stated that evidence did not support returning to the reservoir as a primary target. As days passed without progress, the atmosphere grew heavier. The family continued to show strength during public briefings. They engaged with search groups and expressed gratitude for community support. Their presence at the command center added emotional weight to each passing hour. The absence of answers made every lead feel important, even when none produced results. The mid-period of the investigation ended with a striking disconnect. The primary search zone had been cleared. The expanded zones had been searched without success. The timeline remained fragmented. Media pressure increased, public theories multiplied. A sense of urgency turned into a sense of confusion. Investigators faced a difficult crossroads. They had to decide whether to continue expanding the search outward or to return to earlier locations that had been marked as cleared. The final days before the next shift in the case brought no new evidence. Search teams reviewed old footage, they evaluated new volunteer reports, they reassessed terrain maps, they repeated drone flights over distant sections of land. Still, nothing surfaced. The escalating question became clear. If the initial logic was correct and she attempted to drive home, why did the vehicle not appear on any roadway, embankment, or reservoir? And if the initial logic was incorrect, where did the timeline break from what witnesses believed? The absence of answers created tension between early assumptions and emerging doubts. That tension set the stage for the next phase of the investigation, where a new team would enter the search effort. Their arrival would challenge earlier conclusions and introduce the possibility that something had been missed in the reservoir that everyone believed was empty. Strong exit line. The search had widened every direction except the one that mattered, and the pressure moved toward a single growing question. If the reservoir had been cleared, why did uncertainty continue to point back to it? Chapter 3. The third week of the investigation brought a change in momentum. A specialized volunteer dive team arrived in the region after watching news coverage of the case. They were known for locating submerged vehicles through targeted sonar sweeps. Their members had experience with lakes, reservoirs, and rivers where traditional surface-based searches struggled. They contacted the family and offered to assist. The offer was accepted quickly. The team then coordinated with law enforcement regarding access to search zones. The arrival of the new team brought renewed attention to Prosser Creek Reservoir. The reservoir had been scanned before, yet the dive team asked for permission to search it again. They explained that sonar equipment differed from one operator to another, and that deeper or angled passes could reveal shapes missed during earlier sweeps. Law enforcement granted access. The decision reflected the need to reconsider earlier assumptions after weeks without results. The team launched their boat from a small ramp near the campground. It was the early afternoon of August 21, 2022. The surface of the reservoir was calm. Sunlight reflected off the water in wide patterns. The operators moved in slow, deliberate lines, allowing their sonar equipment to capture data along the floor of the reservoir. They focused on areas close to the campground first. Their approach favored detailed angles rather than broad sweeps. Within a short period, one of the operators noticed a shape that did not match natural terrain. The silhouette appeared as a rectangular form, resting at a downward angle. The position suggested a large object. The operators marked the location and moved in for a closer scan. As the image clarified, the outline resembled a submerged vehicle. The reading showed what looked like an SUV tilted nose down. The object was approximately 14 feet underwater. The team paused and reviewed the sonar readouts. The outline was consistent and stable. There was no indication that it was debris or a natural formation. The team notified law enforcement immediately. Deputies arrived on scene and established control of the area. A decision was made to send a diver down to confirm. The water was cold and carried suspended silt, yet visibility improved near the object. The diver reached the vehicle and noted that it matched the description of the missing Honda CR-V. The windows appeared mostly closed. The vehicle was oriented with its rear closer to the surface. The confirmation produced a shift in the investigation. The discovery placed the vehicle in the same reservoir that had been searched earlier in the case. The fact that it was located so close to the shoreline raised immediate questions. Law enforcement established a perimeter and coordinated with recovery teams. The process required careful handling. Divers attached lines to the vehicle. A tow truck positioned itself along the bank. The extraction took time due to the angle of the slope beneath the water. As the vehicle was brought upward, investigators watched from the shoreline. Family members were kept at a respectful distance. When the vehicle broke the surface, responders confirmed that the license plate matched the missing vehicle. Once the vehicle was placed on land, law enforcement documented its exterior condition. They noted the presence of water inside the cabin, mud on the lower panels, and a downward front angle. They confirmed that human remains were inside. The discovery answered one part of the case and opened many others. The confirmation that the vehicle was in the reservoir challenged earlier conclusions. Investigators reviewed their initial search documentation. They noted that previous sonar sweeps covered similar areas, but the angles used by the volunteer team produced a more defined reading. The earlier scans may have captured partial reflections or unclear shapes. It was also possible that silt on the reservoir floor created interference during initial passes. Law enforcement then began the recovery phase. They documented the placement of the vehicle in detail. They measured its angle, depth, and distance from the shoreline. They recorded the position of nearby underwater terrain. They examined conditions that might explain why the vehicle did not appear clearly on earlier scans. Factors included water clarity, sediment layers, and differences in scanning technique. The immediate priority became determining whether the entry of the vehicle into the reservoir showed signs of foul play. Investigators looked at the embankment near the point where the vehicle likely entered the water. They searched for broken branches, tire tracks, or soil disturbance. They found limited physical indicators. The terrain near the water did not show deep marks. The slope near the entry point was shallow in some areas, which could allow a vehicle to enter quietly without leaving strong surface evidence. The absence of clear marks added to the uncertainty about the exact path of entry. Law enforcement provided an update to the public. They confirmed the vehicle's recovery, stated that the investigation remained active, and emphasized that no conclusion about cause of death would be released until official results were available. They noted that the reservoir held unique conditions that could make detection difficult. They also stated that the volunteer team had provided valuable assistance. The community reacted strongly to the discovery. Some residents expressed relief that answers had finally surfaced. Others questioned how the vehicle remained undetected for so long. The fact that recovery occurred in a reservoir that had been labeled as cleared raised questions about the reliability of early search conclusions. The presence of the vehicle so close to the campground added tension to the narrative that had developed in the previous weeks. Investigators reviewed additional evidence from the vehicle. They looked at the interior for signs of forced entry or disturbance. They noted the state of the seats, windows, and controls. They examined the gear shift position and dashboard. They found no immediate indication of external tampering. They also considered whether the vehicle could have rolled into the water without direct human action. If the vehicle was in neutral or if the slope was angled enough, entry without acceleration was possible. Investigators did not draw conclusions at that stage. The medical examiner's office took custody of the remains. They began the process of determining the cause and manner of death. Law enforcement stated publicly that no result would be released until tests were completed. They emphasized the importance of accuracy and clarity. They also noted that toxicology would require time. In the days that followed, the investigation focused on explaining how the reservoir avoided detection during earlier searches. Teams reviewed environmental factors such as water turbidity and the density of sediment. They also reviewed data from previous sonar scans. Some of the early scans showed faint shapes that were dismissed as natural formations. The new data showed that the shape found by the volunteer team was clearer and more defined. This suggested that angle variation played a role. The difference in equipment capability was another factor. The volunteer team used a system designed for precise object detection in shallow and mid-depth waters. The equipment produced clearer imaging in angled passes. Earlier search teams used standard units that were effective for broader scans. The difference in technology contributed to the outcome. Investigators also considered the possibility that the orientation of the vehicle mattered. A vehicle that rested at a downward angle could reduce the clarity of the sonar return. If the rear of the vehicle was slightly elevated, the reflection pattern could appear irregular on standard sonar. This could cause the shape to blend with natural contours of the reservoir floor. The official findings later confirmed that there was no evidence of foul play. The medical examiner reported that the cause of death was drowning. The manner of death was classified as accidental. Law enforcement stated that the evidence supported the conclusion that the vehicle entered the water during the night and came to rest in its recovered position. They reiterated that no indicators suggested criminal involvement. The community response to the findings was mixed. Some felt relieved that answers had been provided. Others continued to question the timeline and earlier search decisions. The lack of early detection remained a significant point of discussion. Law enforcement acknowledged the difficulty of the case and expressed appreciation to those who assisted in the search, including the volunteer dive team. Investigators then addressed procedural lessons. They noted that reservoirs with uneven floors and variable silt layers could require multiple types of sonar. They stated that angled passes should be standard in future searches of similar terrain. They emphasized the importance of repeated reviews in areas close to last known locations. They also acknowledged that early certainty regarding cleared zones could affect investigative direction. The final phase of the case brought reflection within the community. Many people who volunteered during the search expressed support for the family. They emphasized unity and compassion. Community centers held gatherings to honor the memory of the teen. The family thanked the public for their efforts and asked for privacy as they adjusted to the loss. Law enforcement closed the active investigation after confirming all findings. They stated that the case highlighted the challenges of search efforts near reservoirs and wooded terrain. They reaffirmed that all evidence pointed toward an accidental entry into the water. They acknowledged that the delay between disappearance and discovery created understandable frustration. They also stated that the cooperation between law enforcement, volunteers, and specialized teams provided the final answers. The reservoir, calm again in the days following the recovery, became a point of quiet reflection. People visited the site to place flowers or stand along the shoreline. Many looked at the water and considered how a large object had remained unseen for so long. The sense of closure remained partial. The facts provided answers, yet the timeline still carried places where certainty gave way to silence. The investigation ended with a clearer understanding of what happened, but with lingering questions about why earlier searches did not detect the vehicle. These questions encouraged a broader discussion about search procedures across similar regions. They also underscored how narrow distances could hold significant uncertainty beneath the surface. Strong exit line. The recovery solved the central mystery, but left a lasting reminder that even a familiar landscape can hide answers in plain sight, waiting for the right angle to reveal what was there all along.